this week is a pretty big week for where I work. And a lot of talks, a lot of emails, a lot of celebration, a lot of things going on throughout. I wish I had my dad's shirt today, but I didn't have one like that, or I'd wore it. But that's what this week is all about. So it gives me the opportunity to talk this morning, and it gave me the opportunity to study everything I could find to get in the Bible that talks about us as being part of government. And that's what this week is all about. This week is a time for us to celebrate, get together with our families. There's a lot of ball games. There's a lot of people that don't work. I'm sure there's going to be a busy day at the golf course, so maybe not everybody's got the day off, but it seems like there's always something going on the 4th of July, and families get together and everybody has fun. It's a day of fun. As far as the place where I work, there'll be four aircraft taken off, and they'll split into twos, and they'll cover 45 cities in 20 minutes. So if the parades are off, it doesn't matter. You got your two ship over your parade, and hopefully everybody looks up when they need to look up, and they see the aircraft, and they come back and land, and then we have people that go meet their families and can have the rest of the afternoon off. So it's a day of work for most of the people that have anything to do with parades also. It's probably a busy day for a lot of people throughout this country. But what is this day? It's labeled a lot of things. It's every country has one, and every country has one for different meanings. But the Bible was written not for any certain country. It was written so that people have the right mindset with living their earthly lives. And in our country, it's called Independence Day. It's just coincidental that the Canadians have a day that coincides within a day of ours. And there's a lot of celebrations that happen at the same time, especially up on the Great Lakes. So the Great Lakes have really big celebrations because they share that with Canada. But what we have is 4th of July, Independence Day. It's a time when leaders back in the past had a Congress that wasn't recognized. They'd already got together and they'd already formed a Congress. And that Congress got together and they wrote the Declaration of Independence, and it was signed on July 4th of 1776. And in that, I just want to read one sentence of it. I know in times past I read a lot of it, but there's just one sentence that really stands out. And it says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And I think that's the paragraph that everybody remembers. There's a lot in the Declaration of Independence that talks about the existing government and why Congress enacted that document and why we went forward with the war against England that we had after that document was declared. But in there we find life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life we all were given. It was just something that we had, we were born with, and we find that in Genesis 2:7. "And the Lord God formed man in the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." And you had no choice. You didn't have a choice of the family that you were born into. You didn't have a choice of the country. You should be grateful where you are and think about other countries and what they have. But you had no choice. I had no choice. You were just lucky to be where you are. Liberty, freedom, or release from slavery, imprisonment, captivity, or any other form of arbitrary control. This is found in Galatians 5:1. "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." Liberty. I think it was part of the Declaration of Independence because they did the declaration because they were being held back because of the King of England, and they were talking about not having the freedom of religion, and that was going in the wrong direction. So they talked about liberty, having the freedom, having freedoms, happiness. It's another thing that they didn't have under the King of England. They didn't have happiness because they had to give up of so much that they were building to give back to the king, to go on the ships and to go back over to England. Happiness, glad, cheerful, joyful, optimistic, content. That's the way you should be. As Christians, you should be that way every week, every day, especially in this country. It's just hard to imagine someone in this country that's not happy. We find an example of that in 1 Peter 4:13. But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. So our happiness should be, we know we're doing the right thing. We know we have a chance of a home of the future. We should always be happy. We should always be able to think about that. Another thing that we get as being part of Independence Day and being part of the government that we're part of is we get four freedoms. There's four freedoms that we are given. We have the freedom of speech. We have the freedom to say whatever we want to say. And we have no recourse but to go against anybody who says that. Now, that is not always true. After 9/11, that changed. You now don't have the ability to speak against the President of the United States. There are certain people within our government, within our hierarchy, that you do not have the ability to speak freely. So there is some things that happen after 9/11. But part of the Independence Day was that we had a total freedom to speak any way we wanted to speak. The next thing that we have that's free is means of worship. We have the freedom to worship any way that we would like to worship in the United States. That's the second freedom that we have. We as citizens or as part of this government have no right to put down another religion. That's what this country was based upon. I'm not saying that we agree or disagree with other religions, because I know we disagree. And everybody has their own opinion, and everybody interprets the Bible in their own manner. But that's part of our freedom. Part of our freedom is we see all the different religions, and we see all the different ways of thinking that people have. I'm not saying that they're right. I don't want to stand up here and say that they're right, because I don't believe that. I believe that they're interpreting the Bible in a different manner. But they believe they're right. They really do. They believe in their religion, and they're very happy with having the freedom that they have. And it's a very good freedom that we have, because I'm not sure that the government believes in the religion that we have. And I think if government had anything to do with our religious beliefs, we would have a hard time worshiping here this morning, because I'm not sure that we have the religion that would be the accepted one throughout the country. The third thing that we have is we have the freedom from want. We have a freedom from want. Our government guarantees us food, clothing, and shelter. And a lot of people don't understand that, but we are guaranteed that in the United States of America. We don't have to work for it, which I think is what's wrong. But we are guaranteed that freedom in the U.S. You can go to any county. You can go to several organizations that are sponsored by the federal government, and you're guaranteed those three things. We have the freedom of want. Now, it depends on how much you need more than that as to how big your want is, but you have the freedom of want. The next thing that we're guaranteed in Independence Day is the fourth freedom, and that is the freedom of fear. We, up until 9/11, had the freedom of fear. And we talk about presidents and decisions that are made and decisions that we don't have control over. But we have the freedom of fear. we are now, it's a really weird war that we're in. Because the United States of America today is at war. We are in a full-blown war today. And everyone in this congregation, you still go to Walmart. There's no rationing. We aren't taking industry, taking John Deere and manufacturing munitions. We aren't doing the kinds of things that we usually do when we're at war. But we are at war. And people don't understand because CNN and communications that we see every day taint what we see and give you one side of the war that we're under. The war that we're in over in Iraq could get bigger, could get smaller. We actually have, there's three religions over in Iraq. And our wish, our hope, is that those three religions separate Iraq into three different states. And each one of those religions has its own state, and they all form a government that can talk to each other and can manage that portion of the world economically and safely, peaceably, and live with everyone else and get rid of the terrorists that over there rule that country. And we're hoping that that's part of the future, but right now we're over there to try and help that happen. And I read in the paper, and I listen to our congressmen say that we need to bring our troops back. And we brought our troops back from Vietnam. I don't know if everybody remembers. That's before my time. I've had the opportunity to read the history and understand what happened in Vietnam. But what happened in Vietnam is we brought all our troops home. Okay, and after we brought all our troops home, 1 million people died. They died within 6 months. The country began a civil war between both sides, and the U.S. just stepped back and brought all the troops home, and 1 million people died. We believe that's what will happen in Iraq. We've already done that. We've already started to try and help people make some certain decisions, but we let them make their decisions. And we get rid of the dictatorship and try to have more of an open government. But we don't want that to happen again. Because when the U.S. pulls away from Iraq, we need those three states to be talking to each other, and we need those three religions to be talking to each other and to go forward. So as you hear that, you never hear what the outcome of the United States of America is trying to do. You don't really hear what the final outcome is. All you hear is the number of troops that we're losing. We lost over 3,000 people September 11th, 2001. Over 3,000 people here in the U.S. We've lost equal amount of troops now. It's just equal. We lost that many people in one day. We've lost the same number of troops, U.S. troops, today that we lost in one day. If we weren't taking the fight to them, the numbers here would be even. It'd be unreal what the numbers here would be. CNN's not putting that out there. But I wanted to let you know that this government, this freedom that you have, you're free from all fear because this government has decided that no one comes on our soil. So we always take the fight to them. The fight is always on someone else's soil. When we were under President Clinton, we had more wars than we've ever had in the history of the United States of America. And a lot of people don't know that because that's not public. But we had more conflicts, and what we were mainly doing, what the United States military was doing, was we were going to take U.S. citizens out of countries and bring them home. That was our national defense strategy, was to go get people and just evacuate the embassies and evacuate the countries and to bring them home. And we were at war to do that. We had to fight our way in, we had to get the people, and we had to fight our way out. We did more of that under Bill Clinton than we've ever did. Bill Clinton set us up for the rest of the world to have no fear of the United States of America. They had no fear. We now have a president that takes the war to anybody that brings it to us. It doesn't matter who that is. If they bring anything to us, we go to them. And we go to them immediately. It's no questions asked. Planes are in the air. Bombs are dropped. And then they leave us alone. There's nothing happens in September 11th of 2001. There's some terrorist activity and there's some gang activity in the U.S., but it's been very safe. So we have the freedom of fear. Those are our four freedoms. I tried to make them as simple as I could, but those are the four freedoms that we have in this country. What are we to our government? We are citizens to our government. And I'm going to go through the same verses that I went through a couple years ago and talk about our role, because I couldn't find anything more in the Bible on government other than it talks about our role in us being citizens. What is a citizen? A citizen is a member of the state or nation who owes allegiance to it by birth or naturalization and is entitled to full civil rights. That's what a citizen is. I had the opportunity to go down to the border for the whole month of February. And the only thing that really disturbed me about being down there and building the Great Wall that's going to be thousands of miles long, and it is a great wall, it's 15 foot high. It's actually three walls with lights. So the amount of your tax dollar that's going into that wall is amazing. But it will protect you. They found a tunnel. They actually found a couple tunnels that go for several miles to the U.S., and that's the drug tunnels that they used to have down there. They don't have those anymore. I think our society is going to be better for us to control our borders. But I had the opportunity to go down there, and the only thing that really confused me was there's no U.S. flags. There isn't any. Along the border, the first 25 miles from the border is all Mexican flags. All flags from Mexico. Which we looked, we kind of had a contest. The only U.S. flag we could find was at the Border Patrol station. So I look at this as citizens, and we define what citizens are. And I still look at down in parts of our country, they're not being taught what it is to be a citizen. I could understand the U.S. flag flying beside that flag, and that would have made sense to me. But we couldn't find the U.S. flag. We had a hard time finding it. We did go by the Iowa flag, and I didn't think I'd be able to find the Iowa flag, but they had it for sale down there. They had flag shops, and it was there. So we flew the Iowa flag every day we were down there. But we are citizens. And the Christian is a citizen. Christ was tested in Matthew 22:15-22. And he was tested. I'm going to paraphrase that test. I'm not going to read verse by verse. But the Pharisees and the Herodians, they sought to trick Jesus. They thought, well, we'll trick him. We'll use the government against him. And we'll see how he answers this question. And it says, they ask, is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? If Jesus had answered yes, the people would react because they hated the Roman government. The people back then felt that they were being put upon by the Roman government, and they hated the government. But if Jesus answered no, then he would be arrested by the Romans because they were there. So either way, the Pharisees and the Herodians felt like they had Jesus either way. He was going to be taken away or he was going to be stoned by the people. Then in verse 19, Jesus did not allow himself to be tricked. He requested a coin. He said, bring me a coin. And he asked, whose image is on the coin? And they said, it's Caesar's. And then he said, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. And they marveled because everybody was happy, so they left. But Jesus had given a forthright answer to the question. We have duties to God and we have duties to the state. These duties shouldn't conflict. What makes people good Christians will also make them good citizens. Every person is subject to the government, and we find this in Romans 13, 1 through 5. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. Here we find, let every soul be subject unto the higher power. The verb be subject is something that the military uses. The definition is to arrange yourselves. Everyone has a role. And we arrange ourselves in the church. Everybody has gifts. Everybody has talents. Everybody has abilities. But this tells us to be subject unto the higher power. So arrange yourself. We all have a role in government. Some of us are workers. Some of us are leaders. Some of us are looked up to. Some of us volunteer. Some of us take part. Some of us don't. We all have roles. It teaches us to arrange ourselves in those roles and always help. All rulers are of God, and they are ordained of God. Our government is based on freedom and the right to choose, as we did in 1776 when we voted as a republic to form a new government, which was ordained of God. In verse 2, Paul tells us to not revolt against a government leader if we don't like what he does to us. Don't do evil to him, obey the laws of the land. And again, this is during the Roman Empire. He's speaking during the Roman Empire, which would eventually go away, as is the case of 1776 in the U.S. Verse 3 through 5, God's purpose through the state is to aid the good and to punish the evil. Governments are ordained of God to help citizens accomplish the greatest good for the greatest number and to prevent evil people from profiting at the expense of the community. Assuming the government fulfills its purpose, one reason for obeying state laws would be fear of punishment. However, for Christians, there is a worthier motive, namely being good citizens is a part of being good Christians. God wants Christians to cooperate with other citizens to live in peace. Duties of a citizen. The first duty of a citizen is what we read in these first five verses, is to obey the laws. Your first responsibility is just to obey and to do what you're told. And we find, I have an example of a story of a police officer. A law officer was arrested for going 41 in a 35-mile-an-hour zone. My kids can relate to this. When he pleaded guilty, the judge asked him, why did you not say that you were on call, which allows you to go 10 over the speed limit, and the case would have been dismissed? He replied, and I wish more officers were like this, because, sir, I was not on call. Later in a traffic case, he says, sir, I was not on call. Therefore, I'm being honest. And later in a traffic case, he had the same judge. And the testimony was totally different between what he said and what the defendant was saying. And the judge listened to everything he said because he knew this officer had a reputation of always telling the truth. So it's built on obeying the laws makes you look like a Christian. And you have more respect in the world and around people if you obey every law. I'm not saying you can't complain about the laws. I'm not saying you can't write letters to your congressman and try to get the laws changed, because that's part of also being a citizen, is to elect the right officials and to write the right letters and to be part of the government. Next thing we need to do is pay our taxes. This is in verse 6. For this cause pay you tribute also, for they are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. In verse 7 we find that we are to honor those in authority. And like this policeman, it's easy to honor policemen that do the right thing. It really is. But you honor the officials that are over you as a Christian in government. And again, Paul's talking in when the Romans were around. So he's trying to teach these people that they need to obey the Roman government back in the time that they're in. For us, it's easy. For us, it should be a piece of cake. Things that we should do to those in authority. There's Josh read 1 Timothy 2, 1-4. And what those verses say is that we should pray for them. We should pray for them every day. We should see that they're paid. It's things that we should do. Tribute for tribute. We should render to all their dues by helping them when they need it. So any official that we can help, we should help. Any policeman that we can help, we should help. Any information that they need, we should try and help them get. The next duty that we have as a citizen is to vote. This is a very precious privilege that we have that Paul didn't have. Back under the Roman Empire, he was like a servant with the government. He didn't have any rights to make decisions, but he was part of that government, but he never had the right to vote. This is a very precious privilege, and it's coming up to when we have to use that right when we elect the next president. The bad thing about our electing the next president is there's 20 applicants, 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats that are vying for the office of presidency. It makes it very hard. There's some churches that have talked at work about having a class on listing the different people that are running for president and talking about their family and talking about their beliefs and coming up with what each individual has as their main topics and their main points. Our vote is very important. It's the only say that we have on what happens in the future. Jury duty is very important as a citizen. The other thing is defense of our country. We, in the class that I had downstairs for a month, one of the questions that was asked of Troy, who was filling in for me in a week, was, can we have peace without war? Something to think about. Can we have peace without war? Everybody needs to think about that. I'll give you my opinion. My opinion is we cannot. As a government, and with society as it is today, I do not believe that we can have peace without war. Now, I know I'm a military member, and I've been one for 23 years, so I'm tainted, because I get to see what happens in every country. Right now, I'm studying about China, and that's a test that I have to take next week. So my studies on China are very hard, because China has two classes of people. They have the upper class and they have the no class. And that's really what they are. When I talked about our four freedoms, China doesn't have those four freedoms. They have people that die every day. But they believe in life. China believes in life. So I'm not sure that we'll ever go to war with China, because they believe in life. And we're over in Iraq, and we're over in Iran, where they do not believe in life. Life is meaningless. So it's different. But can we have peace without war? This was a group of kids downstairs that I asked for their opinion on that. Half of them believe that we can have peace without the military. And half of them believe that we have a need for the military. There's countries today that have no military. And they survive, but they're surrounded by water. And they really don't have the raw resources and the economics and some of the things that the other part of the world wants. But they do survive with no military. It's an interesting question. In closing, I'd like to say the home, church, and the state are the three institutions that exist by divine approval. Ideally, people can be good members of their families, active members of the church, and worthy citizens of their country. A heavy responsibility rests on all of us in this wonderful land of freedom to see that our homes, Christ Church, and the government function properly and fulfill God's plan. With that, I offer you the gospel invitation. Whatever needs you may have, come forward and be part of Christ Church as we stand and as we sing.